We heard Stormy Weather from the Charles Mingus Jazz Workshop album. Ted Kirson was the trumpeter, Eric Dolphy on reeds, Charles Mingus, of course, on bass, and Danny Richmond drums. Ted Kirson is with me in the studio now. He's in Philadelphia for a concert this coming Friday and Saturday evening in memorial to Eric Dolphy. There'll be two shows, by the way, at 9 and 11. A little bit about Ted Kirson. He grew up here in Philadelphia and was later encouraged by Miles Davis to go to New York, where he ended up playing with Philly Joe Jones, Mal Waldron, and Cecil Taylor. In 1960, he joined Charles Mingus Jazz Workshop, where he played with Eric Dolphy for, I believe it was 2 years that he stayed with the workshop. And after those 2 years, he started his own group. And in 1964, a recording with this group was released called The New Thing and The Blue Thing, and also they recorded a session which has recently been released by Arista Records, and that one's called Tears for Dolphy. Ted Kirson has also spent a lot of time in Europe playing there as well as in the States. Let's start with talking about the Mingus Jazz Workshop. How did you get involved with the group? How did you first join it?
Well, that's a strange story to Mingus Jazz Workshop and myself. You see, the job really was, well,
How many recordings did you make with the workshop while you were there?
Well, I made about six. Now is a new one out that was made in 1960. It's what we call a pirate record, and it's the best of all the records. I have a copy. It cost me $100. I have it in Paris. But it was something stole from French, from the French radio, sold to Japan, then imported back into France. You only can buy it in France. But it's the best of the Mingus bands, all the Mingus bands. The tape was so great that the guy who stole it cut the piano player off, who happened to be Bud Powell, but he didn't know it. Just noticed the piano player didn't fit in that band. But it was when Bud was in his top form.
What kind of reception did you get from the audience with the workshop when you'd play at clubs? I get the impression from Mingus that, on the recording that I just played, the workshop recording, it's recorded in a studio, if I'm not mistaken, but Mingus says at the beginning, don't rattle those glasses and stop serving and make sure you don't applaud. Were people in clubs ready for that kind of attitude and ready for the music that was being played?
Well, the thing is, Mingus, people was never ready for what was going to happen in that band, you know, and that was his whole philosophy. You know, he would never let you just sit and relax and be ready for it. And, it's just like those things he was saying is something he used to do every night. And that was just a thing, you know. You really didn't. And there was one time I remember when Eric was getting too many applause. That's when he stopped the applause. See, all those little things that you hear on the records was parts of something that really, history in that band. Each little thing is a story in itself, but he puts them all together, and it sounds like a 5-minute thing. You know,
but the things that are being recorded now is work that you played in 1964. This new Arista release, for instance.
That's right.
It's a credit to the work you were doing then, and possibly just the recording companies or you know the record buying audience in America that's you know waited till now to appreciate it.
But the thing, my best records are not even out yet. Like, not in America. The best one, I would think, is one called Pop Wine, which you'll probably hear 10 years from now, or 12, like this one, which would surpass that. In fact, they didn't ask me, when I heard this record was coming out, I said, oh, my God, why would they put that out? That's what I thought, you know, because the record, another record, this Pop Wine record that I love so much, is superior to that. But knowing how the thing works now, it'll be 12 years before that come out.
Now, when did you leave the States to go to Europe?
Well, I left originally in 60, but I was always going and coming back and not very interested in doing anything here at all, you know. Just coming back to see my family, more or less.
Okay, I want to play an excerpt of your 1964 recording on Atlantic Records. The recording's called The New Thing and The Blue Thing, and the composition we're going to hear is Ted's Tempo. And, Ted, you want to tell us something about this recording before we hear it?
Before we go into this record, that record was made first.
Oh, okay. I know it's the same year.
It was made first, and the reason why I was trying to copy this one, because this was, at that time, this was the better record.
Mm-hmm.
But I never made it on this one. It just didn't come. It's good music on this one, but the spontaneity, the fire, for some reason, I think it had something to do with the actual recording. It's not that clear. The actual recording of it, as you'll hear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that record, Ted's Tempo, was I used to like to play very fast on Night in Tunisia. That's the chords, the basic chords. And I changed around to one of my own melodies. Okay. So that's why we call it Ted's Temple.
And the personnel on this group is the same people who are on the Tears for Dolphy recording?
Almost, with the exception of a French pianist called George Avenidas.
Okay. It's the same. So we'll hear Ted's Temple from the album The New Thing and the Blue Thing, with Bill Barron on tenor sax and Herb Buschler bass, Dick Burke drums. And this, as we heard, was recorded in 1964.
Thank you.
That was Ted's tempo from the album The New Thing and The Blue Thing, which is a 1964 Atlantic recording. Ted Kersen is in the studio with me now, along with James Womack from the Foxhole Collective. And as we mentioned before, Ted Kersen will be doing a memorial concert for Eric Dolphy at the Foxhole this weekend. On Friday and Saturday evening, there'll be two shows, 9 and 11. This Saturday, I think it is, marks the day that Eric Dolphy was born, about 48 years ago.
Sunday's the 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we left off, Ted, talking about recording these two albums in 1964. I'd like to ask you about your reception in Europe when you first went there, and that was probably before you recorded any albums under your own name in the States.
That's true. Well, no, well, I did make one, but it wasn't released. It was called Plenty of Horn on Old Town Records, and this is the one that had Eric Dolphy playing flute.
Mm-hmm.
Very beautiful thing. And the first time in Europe in 1960 was at the unveiling of the Sidney Bechet statue in south of France. And when we started to play, of course, the people was very upset and they threw paper and bottles and everything else because they thought we was making fun of them. You know, we came in with the talking and the instruments. It was the first time they ever heard anything like that. So they thought we was putting them on. So they stoned us. And it was so bad that I ended up doing Mingus had me do the interviews for him.
Oh, gee.
But what happened after that, I met some agents, and they said, if you ever come back with your own thing, you'd be welcome here. And, of course, this happened to Coltrane and a few other guys. You know, not at the same time, but at different periods.
Well, I've gotten the impression somehow that Europe is in some ways much more receptive to new jazz than the audience in the States are.
Oh, yes. Well, that's now.
Mm-hmm.
But in 60, it wasn't that way, you know. But now it has changed. See, Europe is like... is going through a little cycle thing. During 60, they didn't understand it. Around 64, from 64 to 67, they dug it. 67 was a changeover. They don't dig it anymore. And now they're back to what we call mainstream modern. Now, in Germany, is like you can pick the countries now. You know, around in 64, I would say 64 to 66, all over Europe was very strong on black music or free jazz or modern or whatever, avant-garde, whatever you want to call it. I mean, if you was playing new music, it was you could work. You didn't have to have a name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's only the strongest places are in Germany, and a lot of musicians still hang in Paris, but the work is in Germany. But before that, I played with Charlie Ventura for a short while at his open house in Philly. Well, it's outside of Philly.
You spend time living in New York now, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. New York is going through all kinds of severe economic problems, but do you think that the jazz community is still flourishing there? Is New York still the place in the Northeast for jazz, do you think?
Well, I think New York now, even with the crisis, is better for jazz than ever, because if you pick up a paper like The Village Voice, there's more jazz listed there than any other time I've seen in history, since I've been in New York since 56. So maybe depression and all those things is good for jazz. I don't know. But I know just about everybody's working. And that's great. I mean, they're not making a whole lot of bread. But they're busy and they're recording. Well, they're not recording as much. It was much more recording around 64 to 67 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But the old records are coming out. So that's good, too, because a lot of during that period I was just mentioning, guys was recording so much, nobody heard any of the records. I mean, like, they were just coming out every week, a new album. Was impossible to keep up. Now it's slowed down to a snail pace, but at least you get a chance to hear some of the artists. Now, this is not good for the artists in one hand, because they're not making the bread. But on the other hand, people are finally getting into their music. So that's good, you know.
Would someone who's first becoming acquainted with you and through your Tears for Dolphy album, this 1964 recording, have a kind of a different sense of your playing? I mean, has your playing changed a lot since then, or not?
I would say so. Unfortunately, well, if you hear the group, you'll see it's quite different. The group is a mixture of inside and outside, is one of my terms. It has some strong blues roots, but it has some strong free things. It's more of a, I would say it's like a synthesis of everything I've ever done. It's more of me. This is only one part of me, mm-hmm. a very small part.
What do you like as a leader? Now, I mean, you played with Mingus, who's one of the most probably strong-armed leaders around, very, very rigorous. What's it like to work with you?
Well, I'd say I always put Mingus down for being rough, but I think I'm probably even rougher, but in another way. You know, I always believe you can get the thing you want out of a person, you know, without knocking him down. Of course, I would probably get into that too, because I'm a pretty big guy. But for instance, like a drummer was playing with me in Baltimore. The biggest job I had in New York was at the bottom line. Well, I told him to do something, and he went out. I mean, he just went berserk. And if I didn't really control myself, we would have been like doing a little dance on the stage, you know, which would have been very uncool. And so that just brought me to mind that I could be in a Mingus thing. The thing is that when you work with, you're influenced by people without even knowing it. Just being around them, you pick up things, you know?
Okay.
And I probably picked up a lot of things from Mingus.
You know? Who's going to be playing with you this Saturday and Friday?
Okay, we're going to have Bill Barron, tenor sax, is one of my old partners and a dynamic musician. And people will be glad to hear him. He's from Philadelphia, from North Philadelphia.
Kenny Barron's brother.
Yeah.
By the way.
Oh, I don't say that.
Well, likewise, because, vice versa.
You know, everybody's saying that, but that's, I don't know. I don't think that's a nice thing to say. But anyway, Bill Barron, Joe Rigby's playing tenor and flute and alto. Jim McNeely, Fender Rhodes piano. Dennis Irvin, bass. Sam Jacobs, conga drums. I think that's it, and myself.
The concert's in memorial for Eric Dolphy, and I would suspect that many of the people who are listening to this broadcast now are not really familiar, very familiar with Dolphy's music. So I'd like to ask you to just say a few words about his place in jazz.
Well, he was a dynamic force. You know, he's one of the true original bad cats, and he had an original sound. Usually people liked him right off, or they didn't like him at all. Because his playing it wasn't the middle of the road thing. But before, now, that's hard to say. When he first came on the scene, he was playing like Bird, when he was playing with Chico Hamilton. This is before the Mingus thing. And one night, Mingus took Eric and myself down to hear Ornette. Now, this is a very important thing. This is not the point that we was copying, but he wanted us to hear them. And he asked Eric, can you do that? You know, so we said, well, yes. But it was like another one of Mingus's great put-ons. I don't know. And so we just did that to put on the people for a while. Because, but the thing, getting back to Eric, he was one of these guys who practiced all the time, a true genius. But they promised him many things that he never received, and he died with a broken heart. In fact, when he died, I was in Paris, he was in Berlin, they called me. And he had to really leave America. And now, in some kind of way, it upsets me a little bit because all his records are out and everybody's making a big thing. But when the guy was on the set, it was like...
No recognition?
No. Well, he had to... The main point is he had to go back to Mingus bad. You see?
Uh-huh.
I didn't have to go. I was a little bit better financially set than he was, or any of the cats. But that was kind of a drag. But, I mean... Even with all that, was great music made in that band. I guess my main point is that if we could have got out of that personal bit, you know, otherwise, if Mingus was a different kind of a person, I think we could have still made the great music. We probably could have made even more. But sometimes he sort of got in the way of us. He was pushing so hard that sometimes he probably made us stand still. I don't know. It's a crazy thing.
Okay, well, the concert again will be this coming Friday and Saturday evening at the Foxhole. And James Womack from the Foxhole Collective is in the studio. James, is there any discussion planned about Dolphy for during the concert?
Yeah. A noted black historian by the name of Harrison Riley Jr. on Friday evening will give a kind of capsulization of Dolphy's life, his contributions to music in this country, and just a general wrap. And if the audience wants to ask questions, they may ask questions.
Okay, and that's this coming Friday and Saturday. The shows are 9 and 11 o'clock at the Foxhole, which is located on Locust Walk and 40th Street in St. Mary's Church. It's the only church-like building around, so it's really difficult to miss. There isn't really a street there. It's kind of a campus proper, so where Locust Walk ends, just keep walking down what would have been a street. Ted Kirsten, I want to thank you so much for coming by to the station today, and I wish you the best of luck with your new work and with your Tears for Dolphy album, which has just been released, and at this concert this coming weekend, which I'm certainly going to try to attend.
Okay, thank you very much, and anybody coming, I think they'll be well rewarded, because the guys in the band are really happening, you know.
And it'll give us an opportunity to hear your recent work.
Because
let me just ask you, are there recent albums available of you and your group?
No. But see, now we're getting ready to record. We did a thing that will probably come out in September for Arista. It's planned anyway. And we're recording at Newport for Radio Free Europe. And as a guy named Alan Douglas probably will buy that tape. So right now, nothing is really out on the new group. But something should be coming out very soon.
Okay, and one more thing, that before your next tour of Europe, you will be playing again in New York at Carnegie Hall?
Yes, that says June the 27th at 1 p.m. And on that same bill is Anthony Braxton's group. He's having the sextet, and George Coleman is having the octet, and I'm having my septet. So that's a great bill, too.
Okay, Ted Kirsten, thanks again. And we'll hear from the Tears for Dolphy album. We'll hear the title recording from that album. Yeah.
Oh, there's one thing I'd like to say about that tune, Tears for Dolphy. If you ever get a chance to see a film called Teorama, it's by Pier Pablo Pasolini, you will hear me playing. It's called A Tune for a Dead Saxophone Player, and it's in this film. This film was released in 1966, and it's still around.
Oh, so sure. Something worth hearing. Come back to the repertory theaters.
Yeah, it's around. It's just still playing. But you'll hear me playing in the same thing, and Gato Barbieri is on it with me.
Okay. Tears for Dolphy.